Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hi, everyone. This is Carmen.
And Christina.
And this is Historias Unknown, a podcast where we talk about Latin American history. Sometimes it's horrible and deals with heavy topics like racism, corruption, and genocide.
But more than that, it's also about resistance, power, and community. What are we talking about today?
Well, Christina, today we are talking about student movement in Latin America. And I wanted to do more, but I just, you know, didn't get to it. So I'm sure there's going to be more in the future because we've already talked a lot about some student movements.
Yeah. How exciting. I forgot this is what you were doing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I wanted to do this topic in light of the student protests calling for divestment from Israel and for like a ceasefire and everything. And so, yeah, I wanted to talk about student movements in Latin America because there's a rich history, you know, of students resisting dictatorships, U.S. military occupation, education reforms, you know, and more social issues, right?
Yeah, if someone's going to be protesting somewhere, students are usually involved.
It's going to be the fucking students, yes.
If it's not the students, it's the workers.
Right? The oppressed. The people with the least power. I mean, we know this, right? We've talked about some student movements, like in Chile and in El Salvador, which sadly ended in a student massacre. And that was, sorry, I actually mentioned what episode titles they were in case people, I don't know, are new listeners and want to look for those. So Chile, the student movements in Chile, we talk about in the Revolutionary Dogs episode. And then El Salvador, it's the student massacre of 1975. So you kind of know what you're going into with that episode in the title.
Yeah.
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 US-wise, we've also covered a few student movements like the West High Walkout episode, the 1970 Uvalde school walkouts, the Chicano.
One of my favorite episodes.
Yes. Yeah. I actually love talking about student movements. I just realized.
I love especially the walkouts.
Yes. My favorite. The Chicano moratorium. And also, while not fully student led, students and the youth played major roles with La Gran Marcha also that we've talked about.
Well, we did touch on the student walkouts.
Yeah. 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 And of course, in the Chicano movement as a whole, like students played a major role in that as well. So there's a lot more, but that's what we talked about already. So before we talk about Latin American student movements, I do want to talk a little bit about the current student protests, but I won't get into it too much. So I found a helpful video on Instagram, which breaks down the importance of why the protests are happening at the universities. Or like why the students are occupying the university campuses, right? And it's all about endowments, which are funds or assets donated to universities to provide ongoing financial support. And these assets are then invested. And then the money from said investments or the return is used to fund the universities, things like faculty research, renovating buildings, scholarships, and just, you know, stuff for the university.
Mm-hmm.
It's how they make money. These university endowments are majority stockholders in many companies, including Israeli companies.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't know this, then now knowing this, the overkill response from the universities makes a lot of sense because they're protecting their assets, their money.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And while we're at it, I just guess we should define divestment as well, because I don't know how familiar people are with that term. So divestment is basically the opposite of investment. So getting rid of stocks, bonds, yeah. Investment funds, right? So the students are protesting with the goals of having their schools disclose and divest from any and all financial ties with Israel. So they want the schools to disclose how much money is tied with Israel and to then divest, right?
Yeah.
And as many of us that are following this know, these peaceful protests have been met with violence, with riot police,
Yeah, and almost like instantly.
Yeah, really, like not even a day. They've been, you know, like it's been ridiculous, honestly. And they've been met with riot police and even the military. Explosions, arrests, right?
And like these weirdos that are here like calling for police to...
Forgot to even mention that.
Yeah, like, oh, call the National Guard. And it's like, why do you want this so badly?
Yeah, it's weird. It really is. Like, I'm like, what is wrong with y'all?
Fucking weirdo bootlickers.
Yeah. And so a lot of losers don't understand why the students are protesting and what the universities have to do, you know, with Palestine, with Israel. And like I already said.
Or they just don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. But some people don't know also.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's about divesting and not supporting Israel. I hope every time I say that, it just doesn't come off my tongue.
You know, it's because we speak Spanish. Yeah.
I'm just going to say it in Spanish. I'm sorry. I can't say it in English. So it's about divesting and not supporting Israel. And see, it just rolls off the tongue like way
but
better.
But see, when I say Israel, then I think of the name and I think of like our cousin.
Well, it's both a name and a country. So it is what it is. Well, a fake country. But are all nation states. I'm just kidding. So not what this episode's
about.
The
most fake one is...
Yes, Israel. And so not supporting Israel and in a larger scheme, really protesting against the industrial war complex, which has always been a thing for some people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, I mean, it's about the right to protest and free speech, which I thought people loved, right? But only when...
No, only when it applies to their little KKK marches down in
Orange County,
East Coast, or wherever they were at. No, do you remember that one where they were even carrying torches? And Charleston.
Oh, right.
And that's where it was.
It's not the East Coast, isn't that the South? I don't know. It doesn't matter.
I don't know.
It's just not here. That's all I know.
All I know is we're California, Texas.
Yeah. But Orange County is, and there's a bunch of KKK there.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, we should know, too, that divesting is a proven protest practice. And when universities finally began divesting from South Africa, it was a huge blow that helped end apartheid.
It was the beginning of the end.
Yes, it was. And that was such a good way of saying it. I wish I would have thought of that.
Thank you. Thank you. Sometimes I know a little bit more. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, we all have a way with words, I think. So, I mean, students are usually on the right side of history.
Yeah.
Like, do we look back at the Vietnam protesters and say, oh, they were wrong? Not me. Not the majority. Not even like in mainstream education.
Yeah. No, that's very true.
And apartheid, South Africa, like, I don't think anyone... in their right mind would sit here and be like, oh, the people calling for divesting were wrong. The students were wrong. Like,
yeah.
And this is the same. It's not different.
not at all.
Like, don't even get me started on the weirdos, like saying like, this is a plot from Russia and from what else did they say? Like, I don't know, Middle Eastern radical groups to recruit the United States youth and brainwash. I'm like, no, it's not. Like, you guys are weirdos. Yeah. Like, this is not a conspiracy. This is just people opposed to extreme violence. Like, come on.
There's also, because like, I'm in the Portland area, Portland, Oregon. And Portland, Oregon has, you know, Portland State University here, PSU. And they were one of the last to join the encampments. But obviously, being Portland, right away, some people get involved and then things get a little quote unquote ugly. And they like the library, they basically took over the library. And I wouldn't say destroyed
it. Like the public library?
Yeah, the library at the university.
Oh, okay.
And they like, you know, put up graffiti. And I mean, like these things can be painted over. It's not a big deal.
Right. Buildings are buildings. Things are things. But people but have like value.
So I'm at,
things
I'm at
do
work.
Not have value.
Yeah. And I overheard this old man that was like...
At work?
Yeah. Okay. Complaining about how these... He was like, these students are destroying the library. And he was like, you know what? I'm not even going to call them students. These protesters. And the police should just arrest them all. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, first of all, they are...
Protesting is a right protected. by the Constitution. You can't just arrest protesters. Like, these people are ridiculous.
Yeah, and it shouldn't matter what is being protested. Like, how do you not look at the response to this? And, like, how are you not appalled? And did you see all the pictures and videos of, like, the police unmasking people? Like,
yeah,
you know how in Mexico they'll unmask narcotraficantes by pulling, like, their mask down and displaying?
Yeah, like, all dramatic and shit. Like, these are peaceful protesters. Basically, yeah, they're pacifists, right? Because they're against, yeah, war. Like, what is so wrong, yeah, being against war?
Not only that, but against genocide.
Yes.
It's just crazy that,
yeah,
these weirdos, or like the counter protesters, that's the most racist shit I've ever seen.
Fucking losers and weirdos. Like, did you, like, see, I'm the sorry, video but... of the guy calling, and I don't, yes, know where this was at, but he was calling her like a gorilla. Oh, no, he was making like gorilla noises.
They were probably in Charleston. No, I don't know where they were at.
I don't remember. I feel like I saw, but I don't remember where it was at.
I'm sorry, but when you're like in a line and across from you is just pure white people in like American flag shorts and American flags, like, you know
that they're the real terrorists.
Yeah. you know that's the wrong side.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just ridiculous. And, you know, I think here on Historias Unknown, people know where we stand, and we say long live the students. Well,
oh, yeah.
Plus we everywhere, like, have all an of episode. Them. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, on that too.
Old Miss, that's where it was. That sounds, oh, of like course, a racist place.
Yes, it is.
Okay, the fraternity kicked him out, but just the fact that they were all in this
and
protest
together. And they had the audacity
together,
to, like, do that in the first place. So I just wanted to use this to talk about student movements in Latin America from, you know, historical, I guess, student movements in Latin America. But I do want to recommend other podcast episodes that have covered the student protests. Locatora Radio's episode titled USC's Happiest Daddy, Lázaro Agüero.
And I did listen to the whole thing. Also, when I came across the video, I cried like a baby, because that was the most beautiful thing I have ever seen. When he's like, I would be the happiest daddy. I was like, oh my God. Like, in literal tears. I even made a TikTok about it, even though most people know my TikTok has nothing to do with it. Like, I don't usually post any of that. It's just spooky tales things. But mm-hmm. I was like, I can't believe this. This is the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But basically, this family has been all over protests, Palestinian protests. Like, they have a car decked out in like a flag.
Oh, really?
And a sign. Yeah. And they drive all over LA in this truck. So they were at USC.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like one of the first schools I was like, for no reason, automatically LAPD was involved, like, within an hour.
I don't know what her title is, so she's, and they mention it, they have the facts in Locatora Radio.
Yeah, yeah.
But she was like,
let them in,
the chancellor,
them. Yeah,
or the dean. Yeah, she asked the police to come.
Yeah, so they were there right away, even though nothing was happening. And so then, like,
the first,
you know,
day
chaos broke out. Yeah,
yeah,
first day. And so he was there, like, looking for his daughter. But he says, like, he goes to the campus all the time. Of course, he was going to be there that time. And he, in the interview, he says, like, if my daughter gets arrested for protesting for Palestine, like, she's doing the right thing. And that's when he says, I would be the happiest.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just amazing.
He's all of our dads now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other episode is from True Anon, titled Quad Squad. And I want to say that they talk about mainly about Colombia, is it?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
I did get it right.
What's his name?
Brace?
On site. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're also kind of ridiculous if anyone goes and listens. Like,
warning.
There's a lot of jokes.
They're a little silly, and not everything they say is serious.
Some of it is straight up just like a lie joke.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It and it takes time, like, to know when they're being serious or not. But it's still a good episode.
It is informative, aside from mostly Brace, who's
a little silly.
Yeah, yeah.
Very ridiculous person.
Yeah, yeah.
And then 5-4, their episode, which I just listened to and actually haven't finished, but I already know it's going to be good.
Same.
I think I'm about halfway in. And their episode is called Free Rhiannon, Campus Protest and the First Amendment. Because one of them was arrested.
Rhiannon.
Along with students, yes. So yeah, just some episodes, and I'm sure there's more out there, but these are just the podcasts I listen to. So, well, we listen to.
We'll put links in the show notes as well.
Yeah, we should. So yeah, let's get into it. And the first student movement, well, it's more than one, but the first student movements that I want to talk about are from Colombia. Students there have been major players in social justice movements since at least the early 1920s, when they founded the Federación de Estudiantes Colombianos, or in English, the Colombian Student Federation. The students organized against many injustices, one of these being the Masacre de las Bananeras, or the Banana Massacre. And yes, guess who's involved?
Oh my God, let me fucking guess. Bring out the bingo card. God, what's the company called?
The United Fruit Company.
Thank you. I could not remember their name. Yeah, the United Fruit Company. We should really make these bingo cards. I will get on that.
Content warning for violence, including the death of children from the state. So, yeah, a strike began on November 12, 1928, when the United Fruit Company banana plantation workers in Cienaga, they stopped working until the company reached an agreement for better working conditions, but the United Fruit Company refused to negotiate with the workers for weeks. And then on December 5th, 1928, the government sent the army to deal with the workers, which resulted in 47 to 2,000 people, including children, being killed. So that day, workers and their families gathered in the town square of Cien. And I feel like the accent was in the E, so I feel like I'm not saying that right. Cienaga, there, maybe. Cienaga.
Oh, you know, I wouldn't know.
Cienaga, whatever.
Cienaga?
Cien. But that sounds like the N, no? Cienaga. Cienaga. I don't know. So they gathered in the town square and after attending church, and then they were waiting for a speech from the regional governor. And while the workers were waiting, the army set up their machine guns on the roofs of the low buildings and in the corners and closed off access to the street. Then they issued a 5-minute warning that people should leave the area, but then they opened fire onto the crowd of workers and their families.
Oh, God.
The attack lasted 2 days, and one of the reasons that the number of dead varies so much is because many of the people killed were thrown into the sea and others were buried in mass graves. So that's why it's like 47 to 2,000 people.
Wow.
That were killed. Yeah.
Wow.
So the FEC, and that was
The students?
Federation of the Students, yeah, protested the massacre, and one student, Paez Gonzalo Bravo, was killed during the protests.
Oh my God.
This led to strong opposition to the conservative government, and then a long period of liberals being in power followed after that. Then in the late 1940s, students participated in massive nationwide uprisings against the government after the assassination of Jorge Eliezer Gaitan, an anti-establishment politician who would have likely been the liberal candidate for the next presidential election had he not been assassinated.
Of course.
So then in the 1950s, Colombian students were involved in the widespread social movements against the dictator Gustavo Rojas Pinilla. Incidentally, he was the first president to obtain power through a coup since José Manuel Marroquín in 1900. This José guy was, sorry, I don't know much about Colombian history. That's why I was like, this José guy.
We'll have to add it to our list.
No, definitely. That's why I wanted to mention it. He was rose to power during something called the Thousand Days of War. So I definitely...
Oh, actually, I'm a little familiar with that.
Oh, okay. Very little.
I've heard the name.
Oh, I haven't heard it at all. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Gustavo seized power during a coup in 1953 with the support of both conservative and liberal leaders, since they were desperate to end the violent fighting happening mostly in rural areas known as La Violencia. And I feel like I've heard a little bit about that, but I know that Guatemala also had a period called La Violencia, and I might be getting confused with that.
Mm-mm, the movie, famous Disney movie.
Oh, it's during this time.
Strong girl. When they lose.
Encanto.
Encanto, thank you. When they're running away, being followed, that's taking place during La Violencia.
Right.
Oh my God.
La Violencia.
I can't say the word. Yes, thank
Today
you.
Today we're...
My pochanes is taking over.
When I'm thirsty, my pocha comes out even more. And I have not drank enough water today.
Wow. Mine just comes out when it's later in the day.
That too, and I'm tired.
Mm-hmm.
So students opposed Gustavo during most of his time in power, and they were killed for it. On June 8, 1954, a National University student, Uriel Gutierrez, was killed by the military during a march commemorating Paez Gonzalo Bravo, who was killed
in the
1920s.
Symbolism.
Right?
Well, I also can't speak English right now.
We just can't talk, period.
Oh my God.
Doesn't bode well for a podcast. That same day, after students returned to the university from the cemetery, they were shot at indiscriminately by the military.
Oh my God, it just doesn't stop.
No. The following day, students from various universities marched to Bolivar Square to protest against the prior day's violence. And this resulted in arrest and even worse, in about 10 deaths after the military opened fire against the students.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it just got worse.
It's like open season on students. That's crazy.
It kind of always has been, honestly.
That's true.
During these couple of days, 15 people were killed and over 20 were injured. And then I saw that both the police and the military were being mentioned as the perpetrators. But, you know, in terms of state repression and violence, they're one and the same. So it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah.
Students mobilized nationwide against Gustavo Rojas Pinilla, which led to a national strike and Gustavo eventually being deposed. And yeah, there's a lot more, but I want to talk about at least another country. So let's move on now to Argentina.
We'll have to do a full episode on all that.
I mean, there's so much you could do, like,
or a series of, like, episodes. Yeah,
that's what I was gonna say, a series of episodes, because there's just so much out there. Like, I think the one that is, I think a lot of people are familiar with, is the Mexico student massacre of 1968.
Yes.
But we haven't talked about it. Is that the
Tlatelolco?
Yeah,
we only mentioned it.
I don't think you're pronouncing it right.
Chicano, but yeah. I'm not pronouncing it right 100%.
I'm not even gonna try to say it. I have to, like,
anyway,
hear it. But yeah,
I have to read it. I don't have it in front of me, that's why. But we talked about it in the Chicano Moratorium episode, because the
a lot or a little bit.
Like, a little bit. Okay. Like, we mentioned that the journalist we talked about that was killed in the Chicano Moratorium, right. He spent like the whole time covering that massacre. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that is actually on my topic list.
Yeah,
that, and then the Ayotzinapa student.
Yes, it's just terrible.
Like, yeah,
these young people, usually they're young, you know, with their whole lives ahead of them, being killed by the state. But this was a more peaceful movement. There was no violence against the students that I read about.
Really?
In Argentina. Yeah, it's actually the journal article that I read it from, or the website, I don't know what it was. It looked like a journal, but it was titled, or it said about it being one of the most peaceful student movements. So,
wow. Okay.
So in Cordoba, Buenos Aires, Argentina, in 1918, students demanded university autonomy, the right of all university parties to participate in election of university professors, modernizing curriculum, and that university education be available and affordable to all, as well as the secularization of universities. But students, both undergrads and graduate students from the National University of Cordoba, had started organizing it actually in 1916. And they really worked together to create a cohesive and unified movement, you know, with a goal of educational reform. They founded journals, established discussion groups, and organized public lectures to spread their message. And soon, student organizations spread to other universities like the University of Buenos Aires. And there's one more that I didn't write down. I think there's like three major universities, at least at this time. And then in December 1917, the University of Cordoba refused to negotiate with students, and their demands to reopen a boarding house for medical students close to the school. So basically, the school was denied to meet the needs of their students.
Mm-hmm.
And the university ignored the students well into the next year. This was in December 1917. So then in March 1918, because they were being ignored, the students called for a mass protest. They refused to attend school. They demonstrated at the school, passed out pamphlets. They contacted politicians, labor groups, and other student organizations for help. And yeah, like I just mentioned, they were calling for secularization and democratization of the university. Thank you. And so this meant that they wanted to expand student and professor participation in the administration of the university and in modernizing the curriculum. And it's, I mean, it's strange because like nowadays, from what I know, like most professors pick their own curriculum. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess this was a right that was fought for, at least in Argentina. And they also, again, wanted to make university education more available and affordable.
Love it.
By lifting admission restrictions and establishing more flexibility with attendance and with exams to accommodate like lower income and middle income students who had to work.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't just go to school, you know?
That's amazing.
And then in response, the Supreme Council of the university closed its doors to the students and continued to ignore them.
Wow. They're like, oh, you want to do this? No school for anyone.
Fine, don't come. We're closing the door on you. Yeah. So finally, the next month, the National University Federation of Argentina was established to coordinate efforts between the three student-led organizations at the three major universities. And the federation met with the president to present their, you know, issues. And the president declared a need for intervention. So this forced the universities to stop ignoring the students. And then finally, new deans were elected. But the new, and I don't remember the title, I just wrote chancellor. So it could have been some other position. But let's say chancellor.
Yeah. Well,
the new chancellor, and this was mainly for the university in Cordoba. So the new chancellor was a member of an elite association for Catholic men. And the students, they were not okay with this because they're like, one of the things we called for was the secularization of the universities.
One of their demands.
So how are you going to get this Catholic person in a special organization involved in the association of Catholic men? Like, it's fine to be religious, but once you're like, I don't know, actively involved, like that kind of, it's not really secular. Yeah. You're not a secular, you know,
person.
And you can't be secular in your position. That's supposed to be secular, right? So the students called for this chancellor's resignation. They published a manifesto detailing their plan to modernize the university structure. And they also established the first National Student Congress. A month later, the chancellor gave in to the pressure from the students and resigned.
Good.
And then protests continued through October. And as the protests went on, the students looped in and coordinated and got involved with labor unions.
Oh, love it.
And then together they called for a general strike because they were not only protesting for themselves as students, but for workers as well. So then two students were arrested for inciting workers to armed revolt. But the students' arrest only led to more labor unions across the country to protest. Yeah.
So
mass protests all around.
Yeah. We're going to protest even harder now.
Like, oh, you're going to arrest them? Guess what? Finally, the president gave in to the students' demands and issued an executive decree to approve the introduction of a student reform program in which students could be elected representatives in the university's admin councils and influence school policy. And the program made class attendance optional, allowed more flexibility in exam procedures, and eased restrictions on educational materials. And then these reforms were then extended to other universities in Argentina and later influenced university reform movements in Uruguay, Chile, and Peru, and more countries.
Love it. Wow.
So yeah, and I was going to cover more, but like I started to get hungry and I knew we were going to record. So I'm like, nah, this is a good place to end it.
Oh my God. I was gonna be like, what other movements do you have for us,
Carmen? Oh, there's so much more. Even in Colombia alone.
Wow. No, I'm sure. Because
one of the articles I found there, I mean, it listed the history of student movements in Colombia. And I mean, I covered two or three.
From Colombia? Like two, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so much out there. I don't know. Do you have any final thoughts?
No, I guess just love to hear it. Love to learn about it. I mean, like we said in the beginning, you know, if anyone's going to be at the forefront of these kinds of movements, calling out injustices, demanding rights, it's going to be students. then workers, or students and workers together. And
yeah. Yep.
That's just how it is and how it's always been everywhere.
No, and I think that's why so many people hate universities students because...
Oh, yeah. I swear there's something in... Like, someone could write a thesis about, like, the growing hatred of universities and, like...
I'm sure it's out there.
Anti-communism and...
Yeah.
It's probably... Yeah, it probably already exists. You know, right-wingers always saying things about or talking shit about... universities and colleges and how you don't need to go. And I mean, yeah, like it's true. Not everyone needs to go, but to pretend they're not important, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, the increasing, at least here in the US, the increasing that they keep taking away like certain programs, liberal programs, liberal arts programs are going away.
STEM funding.
Programs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. STEM programs have been increasing. Like, I think all of that.
Oh, it's all tied together. Yeah.
The growing right. Like, yeah. So,
and there's like a new anti-school. What do they call it? Free school? Free learning? No. Unlearning.
Oh, my God.
There's an unschooling, took me a while to get there. There's an unschooling movement. Like, and I mean, we're not here to say that public schools are perfect, but one of the reasons they're not as good as that they used to be is because funding has been cut time and time again. Like, how can these schools meet all the needs of all their students when they're not provided with the funding that they need?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, the slashing funding definitely is all, it's all related.
Mm-hmm.
And the response to the students now, all of it. All of it is related.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I guess that pretty much covers it.
Yes.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you have enjoyed the podcast so far, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, a little positive review on Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you can leave reviews. I don't know where else because I only use Spotify and Apple Podcasts, but there's more.
Yeah.
Follow us, I guess, on the socials. And yeah.
Oh, check out my new daily podcast called A Little Bit of Todo. It's like a mini version of this, honestly.
Yes.
And it's fun. It's been fun. My favorite so far was Chihuahuas.
Oh, yeah. That was good.
Yeah. I'll put a link in the show notes.
So yeah. Thank you, everyone, again for listening. And we hope this was one less historia unknown for you.
Bye.
Bye.